Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes, Caught Offside, just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Go on, say what you said off air about my haircut. Just say it.
Oh, JJ got a haircut. Wow. And when you look at it from straight on, it looks like all of his haircuts, like a fade. But what you come to realize when he turns his head is that the fade stops. And it is it like a, it's kind of like a, it's a mullet, I suppose, but like maybe a more metrosexual version of a mullet. I don't know how else to describe it, really.
Non-binary mullet.
It's definitely a hair. It's definitely a haircut you've never had before, and I'm wondering what happened here.
Saw a picture of it. Thought I'll give that a go. Was just feeling saucy. Told the Albanian lads, said, "Hey fellas, my barbers, what you think?" They said, "No problem." I tried to engage them on the career of Rudy Vata, the Albanian Celtic midfielder. They were not having it. They're too young to remember him. Sure. And just let him do his work. And
so there was no mistake here. This is what you wanted. They executed it to perfection, I would say.
Do you like it? Do you like, just say you don't, if you don't like it, you don't like it.
Look, I mean, it's not my favorite haircut I've seen you have. I don't know.
That's fine. It's not as bad as the one I had where there was the big flop of hair on top, and like they, on the one side, they went like right up. Like
it was, yeah, they almost shaved half your head.
Yeah.
I didn't love that one either. But when I was looking at this haircut from straight on, I was like, wow, that looks great. I thought it was a fade all the way around. Then I would have loved it. But the fact that the fade stops and morphs into a mullet, I don't know. It's not one that I would get myself. But hey, you have a confidence about you where you do what you want to do. And who cares what I think?
If Billy Ray Cyrus was in a futuristic world where society was collapsing, he'd have this hair.
Sure. JJ, quickly, speaking of haircuts that maybe I don't necessarily love.
Oh.
This is a weird transition. I always like to point out some random jerseys that I'll see.
Yeah.
You know, sure. What jersey? I don't know what the circumstances would be for this jersey to be purchased.
Oh.
Unless you were of this person's nationality. But you know what I saw the other day? What? A Chelsea Mykhailo Mudryk jersey.
What?
You got to want that.
Yeah.
Like you don't walk into a store and happen across that and say like, oh, all right. Like you got to seek that out. That's an interesting one.
That's an investment in a future that's very uncertain. and listen, I love that guy when he, in the Champions League cameos I saw, not paying attention to the league that he played in whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend, John, and he's an interesting collection of United jerseys. So he has Di Maria, Manchester United jersey.
Oh, that's a. Can you wear that? Like, if you wear that to Old Trafford?
No, I don't. I think it's more. It's more of a. It was bought more, obviously, in hope that he was going to go on to be this great player, and it didn't really work out. I'm fairly sure. Does he have a Memphis Depay Man United jersey? I think he may have.
A very fixed period of time where he decided to go all in on Manchester United jerseys, and it just happens to coincide with just like the biggest disasters.
He's a big United guy. He's got he's got some kit. I have a friend who also just got a Garnacho jersey.
Oh, okay. I like that.
And I think he's like a cult hero already, especially with that goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that. And look, I'm not one to talk. Like, I've got weird. I have an Eagles Charlie Garner jersey. So, you know, like, jerseys.
Do you think it's too soon, though? Do you think, like, people are jumping now? I remember another friend of mine back in college used to have a rule. You can't get a name on the back of a player who's just signed or just started out. You have to give him time before you put the name on the back. So I have another friend from the Liverpool Supporters Club got Darwin Nunez before he kicked the ball. Nunez on the back straight away. What's your thought on that?
I have no problem buying a jersey of a player straight away. Look, I mean, Nunez maybe was a risky one, but like I bought an Iverson jersey for the Sixers before he had dribbled a ball. You know, I had a Brian Dawkins Eagles jersey really early.
But Iverson had lore and he had a history.
Well, he was a rookie. He was, you know,
quite a history going into the pros. Nunez has what, like, had one season, I suppose. I don't know.
I'm okay with somebody getting excited about a new signing or a new play. I'm all right with that.
Can we get excited about this podcast?
Yeah, of course we can. Of course we can. There was a Champions League this week, of course. We'll get into some of those matches. Messi and Inter Miami made their MLS debut in season. This was not an exhibition. This was a league match. We'll obviously talk about that. It was pretty exciting. I thought it was a fun game. And also, Don Garber had some comments that I have to address. I almost want to start the show with it, but we'll save it for a little bit later on. And then the Premier League title race was on full display midweek with Manchester City and Liverpool both in action. We'll talk about that. And then Sir Big Jim, as you call him, Jim Ratcliffe spoke to the assembled media, to the written media, I believe, and addressed a lot of things, many of which were very interesting. I might want to focus a little bit later on in the show about his thoughts about Old Trafford and the stadium situation.
Is Gary Neville's roof going to get finally fixed? Remember, remember in his laundry list of complaints about the Glazers around 2021, when the game never happened, when the protest Liverpool Man United didn't happen, etc. And one of the things the stadium is in is you know, it's run down, it hasn't had a lick of paint. And in fairness, every time he talked about the stadium, there would be a following game where literally the water would pour in from a hole.
Yeah, it's disgraceful. But I think it's an interesting conversation because people like outsiders, people who don't necessarily go to Old Trafford to watch games, Old Trafford is held in a regard. It's one of the most famous stadiums in the world because of the club that plays there. And so that stadium is held in a very high regard. But then the people who attend games there or ownership, like Jim Ratcliffe, who was kind of responsible for this, like they seem to hold it in a different regard. And those two things don't mesh. So I find it an interesting conversation. So we'll talk about some of his thoughts as well. But JJ, of course, the most prestigious competition that was going on, well, is that arguable? I was going to say is the Champions League. I know you are a Premier League man first above all else.
I enjoy the Champions League, but this week, I mean, it let me down. And by Wednesday, I was like, I was calling it the UEFA Champions League. No, anyone? I thought the games were terrible, very poor. But then again, you know, I have been fed a diet over the last maybe 6 to 7 years of unbelievable knockout games. And
Not last year.
Right? Well, we're entering the second year of the UEFA Champions League.
I mean, it was Real Madrid's incredible run a couple years ago where they were just winning every game with like multiple goals in stoppage time. Like since then, I feel like we haven't seen a ton of knockout stage drama.
No. And look, I want to tell you that Porto, Arsenal away in Porto in the first round of a round of 16, in the first leg of a round of 16 tie, the game you saw last night was the game we all saw through the 90s. This is much more a reversion to what European football is like. And that's not good.
So
it was brutal.
Let's start with that.
I was listening
game.
To the Guardian Football Weekly, and Barry Glendening, I think it was, said there's never been a game where the winning goal bared such little resemblance to what went before it.
That's a funny way of putting it. The winning goal was sensational from Galeno in the fourth minute of stoppage time to win it 1-0. I mean, like I just said that we haven't been served much drama. That was dramatic. Now, you're right. What happened prior to it was pretty blah. But the goal itself, beautiful goal, pretty much the last kick of the ball. Incredible moment. What
can
noise?
We talk?
Incredible noise generated from the fans there. Wow.
And the shot into the back of the net with the last kick of the game. Galeno brings the moment of magic.
I think we need to talk about Portuguese lungs at some point.
Yeah.
I do think, and I mean, the way they talk, I heard a Portuguese man talk in the street yesterday. Or was it yesterday or the day before? But it was instantly recognizable, much more guttural than Spanish, you know, quite aggressive. And I think that passes into the roar of the crowd. So the goal has been analyzed because there was so little to talk about in the actual game. The goal has been analyzed to death. Because it's a curly, floaty one.
It's not a screamer. It feels like it's in the air for a while.
Right. It's more like a clipped pass or a cross or something. But David Priest broke it down well. So he's like talking about why is Reyes so far off his line and why can he not shuffle his feet to get across because it's moving so slowly. Now, I think it's brilliant from Galeno to use Rice as kind of a pillar to block Rea. Like he curls it almost round Rice. So David Priest said Rice can help by closing Galeno's right foot. And he doesn't do anything. He does what you think is okay, the kind of stand there, you know. I want that guy closed down, basically. And he felt
I want players closed down. I think that it's overrated when people say turning your back on the shot to block the shot.
It's a criminal offense.
Yeah, people lose their minds over that. And I say your odds of deflecting it are basically the same that way as if
you're
just
standing. I cannot stand. I want full John Terry diving with hands and legs akimbo to try and block this thing. But he said, interestingly for me, because I did feel Ray was weirdly far out. Ray could help by deepening his position, so being a bit closer to the line and probably moving his feet a bit. We should mention that there was one of the most in a bad game, one of the most outrageous passages of play where the aforementioned Galeno, his miss in the first half, which usually from that kind of range, point blank range, I'm saying that's a terrible miss, but the nature of it means it's not. Like the shot cannons off the post.
Right.
Comes back to him so quickly, and he actually gets a great connection, but it goes wide. And you're like watching it, you're like, how the F did that not go in? What am I seeing here?
There's a stat for everything these days. I need to know if anybody has ever missed two shots quicker than that.
I doubt it.
He missed two shots in about half a second.
I was like, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And I thought it had gone in, but the net hadn't moved or reverberated or anything. So I was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But like, you know, Arsenal, in fairness to Porto, I think people thought Arsenal were going to go in there and hammer them, and Porto were like, not really. And they were clever. They closed Arsenal's midfield down. They never let them play. Limited to Arsenal. Did Arsenal have a shot on target?
Sure didn't. this was... I mean, look, Arsenal have, for whatever we've thought of like some of their up and down play and attack this season, some of their goal scoring issues, lately they've been excellent. And by and large, over the last two seasons, they've been very good.
contrast it, and I know it's not the same opposition. Was it who did they have at the weekend? Was it Burnley at Turf Moor, where they just ripped through them?
It was an onslaught.
Onslaught. It was, yeah. And it was and wonderful football and free flowing, and like yes, it's weird. They have these stretches early on in the season where you're like something's not clicking in the attack, and we kind of talked about that. And then they have other moments. Brighton at home, which wasn't even a great performance, but they still the floodgates open for them. Sure. So they are a bit Jekyll and Hyde in that sense. And this was one where the football god said, "Well, you've used up all your goals at the weekend. No more the goals, Nazi. No goals for you. No,
they were terrible. Like, they were terrible. And look, I've seen some of the Arsenal people that I follow on Twitter have said, I think they were pointing out this was Arsenal's worst performance since Fulham, which is one that I think Arsenal.
Oh, yeah, and they were desperate that day.
Yeah. And, you know, this was like, if you want to know what unwatchable looks like, zero shots on target, a 0.5 XG, six successful dribbles, all of this with 65% possession.
That's
unwatchable.
Just,
seeing a ton of the ball and doing almost literally nothing with it. They just looked incapable of generating anything from open play. Now they've been good on set pieces, and their chances that they had in this game both came from
headers.
Set pieces. Yeah. Mm. Gabriel header, corner kicks. And look, there is something to that. Like, there are going to be games, especially in this competition, especially on the road in this competition, where you're going to have to grind out results, and being elite at set pieces is a good way of oftentimes doing that. Having a lot of the possession, not letting the other team get many chances, and then when you get your set piece, you pounce. And Arsenal, they nearly did that. They almost pulled it off, which I think would have been what's kind of a soccer elitism way of putting it, a very mature performance, I think, is how in an alternate universe, like, one of those headers goes in on a corner, and we're saying that about the way they
mature,
they right?
Calculated, perfect away night in Europe. Get in, get out.
Right, but instead they didn't convert those corners, and what we're left with was dreck. I mean, it was really a rough game, and Arteta basically said so afterwards. I mean, Bukayo Saka at times looked like he had a little bit going for him, but he was the only one. No one else was on it. It was bad. I mean, this is like a throwaway the game tape kind of performance from them. And I think if you're them, you're going back home. You're really good there. I still think Arsenal are better than FC Porto. I don't think that that's like a groundbreaking statement. They should. I think they would still be my choice to win. But this was as unmemorable as a Champions League performance can get. And that's a rough, you know. That's a rough thing to say for a team that was excited about getting back to this stage of the competition.
Yeah. It was interesting to watch the Conseil Sau the younger play for Porto, because, and he's on loan from Ajax, because he's his father, obviously, manager of Porto, but he plays so much like his father. Just the way he dribbles, the way he controls the ball, like, he's a great example of how some of these things are probably gene based. Speaking of genes, Pepe, how good are his genes? Me and Pepe, who is a year younger than me, started our mornings.
What does that say about you?
I know. Oh, man. But genetics, again, bad knees. All my uncles have had knee replacements before they were 60. I started my morning by going into Manhattan to get gel injections into my knees. Mm. And Pepe woke up and thought, another Champions League game for me this afternoon. Remarkable. Like, truly remarkable. And I think he used to occupy the zone of biggest S house in world football.
Has he ceded that? Has he removed his crown and handed it to someone else? Gotta be somebody.
I feel like Rudiger has taken it.
Yo, that's a great call.
Yeah.
Mm, that's a really good call on the spot.
Or is he
too.
Like, no, I think Pepe was a more consistent S house. Rudiger is a showboat. S house.
He's, I mean, they're
Rudiger
they're
does the big things. He does the big ones. Whereas he has big flashes of S housery. Whereas Pepe has, you know, he likes to sprinkle it throughout the game.
Yeah. It's like Rodrigo De Paul. Could he be in the conversation?
Yes. What do you mean, could he? Yes.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah.
Who else would be in that?
I don't know. I'll think on that.
Throw it out to the animals.
Yeah. No, that's the all S house team. What a fun team to play against that would be. Oh God. A natural transition point, JJ, going from Pepe. So on the same day that he plays, Lamine Yamal plays for Barcelona and was pretty good. I mean, look, this also was not a great game either. Pretty rough game. Oh, both Jesus. Teams, I think at one point, was it Clive Tildesley on the call where, you know, either him or whoever he was doing the game with, was it Rob Green? I can't remember. But they made some comment to the effect of, like, this does look like two teams that have kind of been off it lately.
And who would have thought, if last year or the year before I told you, well, Napoli will play in the Champions League against Barcelona and it won't be great, you'd be like, what? But
I know both of these teams winners of their league a year ago and both trying to, like, you know, fight off this poor form of what this season has been, of like really disappointing curtain calls to what were really successful seasons a year ago.
I paid this game zero mind, except I saw the two goals. So
I made a mistake. So I was the Liverpool Luton Town game started at 2:30, and this Barcelona Napoli game started at 3:00. I was locked in to Liverpool Luton, saw Luton Town's goal. That game was, you knew there was probably going to be an exciting second half to come. But at 3:00, I knew you were going to be watching Liverpool, and I thought, well, one of us should be watching. Like, I know JJ's got the Liverpool game locked down. One of us should probably have Barcelona Napoli going. So I switched over and. What a mistake. I mean, the second half of the Liverpool game was unbelievable. Klopp was we'll get to it later, but Klopp's comparing it to the remontada.
We need to talk about that. That was a night of second half vibes. He was a big
Klopp
vibe.
Klopp got carried away. But
I think it's very, very.
Yeah, Barcelona in the Champions League semifinal, Luton Town in the league. Sure. Okay, fine. Not carried away. You're right. My bad.
I think he's trying to create a moment. I think he's trying to be a managerial influencer.
Okay.
That's what he's trying to do. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I thought Lewandowski's goal was tidy. Nice goal for him.
Very.
And Osimhen's actually was just really nice strength and skill and buried it. So
Inigo Martinez look like a little boy on that one.
Yeah, didn't he?
Like when you think of Osimhen, you think of a lot of qualities. I'm not saying he's weak, but like, you know, when you think of like who are the strong, like, you know, Alan Shearer was like a strong striker. Like, you know, I don't know if that's the first thing you think of with a guy like Osimhen, but
increasingly it is for me.
Yeah.
He's so dominant in the air, or can be so dominant in the air as well, and as well as on the deck. So increasingly that's the way I'm thinking about it. But finally poised, Andrew, that tie.
It is. I saw Xavi's interview with CBS afterward, which was enjoyable. You know, you can tell him and Thierry Henry have a great relationship with each other. It was good. But you know, he was very complimentary of his team, said how happy he was with how they performed tactically. Really thought they deserved more. They did have some chances that they probably would like to have back that maybe they could have done better with, but they weren't, I didn't think they were great. It was interesting.
But what's Xavi supposed to do now though, Andrew? Like, because he's in the final hours of this relationship,
you
like,
may as well just stay positive.
You stay positive. Why be embittered? You know, You're breaking up. Someone else is getting the dog. Just stay happy.
One thing that he said that was interesting, which I like actually from a mentality from the manager, he was mad that Barcelona were not more aggressive after they scored. He felt like there was blood in the water there, and it was not the time to kind of back off and let Napoli take control of the game, which is what happened. He wanted his team to go for it, and they didn't. And Napoli took the initiative and wound up getting the equalizer. Watching the interview with Xavi, just kind of thinking about, like, Henry during the interview, he paid him a big compliment. He said Xavi is basically the only person he knows that has a soccer brain to this level. It's him and Pep. Like, those are the two that Thierry Henry, a footballing genius, those are the two guys he knows that have that kind of brain for this sport. I hearing him say that and knowing, like, where, you know, Xavi's leaving, he's announced this is it. I am almost more than any manager in the game right now, Klopp, Xabi Alonso, Xavi's career and what happens next really fascinates me, because he did come into a situation at Barcelona that was not good, and he did win a league. And that has all been kind of forgotten, it feels like, because of what's happened this season and because they didn't qualify for the Champions League knockout stage last season.
But also the things he'll have to face down the line because of the way the club is run and has been mismanaged.
Well, and because...
No. There's no future. Like, a lot of these, some of these young, great players will have to be sold. They'll have to be sold.
Yeah.
And you're going to continue with this kind of shopping in the bargain aisle or attempting to shop in the bargain aisle, you know, you're going to see guys who are either at their peak or just gone over the peak, trying to get them in and convince them that this is a project worth being involved in. Like Gundogan is the classic example of that. Mm-hmm. Lewandowski is. I mean, Lewandowski is...
He's 34.
Yeah, so like...
Kind of, you see, I mean, look, he's played better lately. What, he's got 5 goals in his last 4 games, something like that. But like, he's on the other side.
And you're looking at Real Madrid, who are just stockpiling quality youth midfielders and quality youth attackers. And you're thinking, there's a fallow period, unless Barca can be really clever, or get more Wall Street money or more Spotify money or more of their players. I mean, their players are doing
give away more of their media rights.
I mean, yeah, whatever they have to, I mean, just literally sell their soul to stay in touch with what Real Madrid are.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
There's a gap opening up for that second spot in Spain's elite.
And the Xavi thing is just interesting to me because, like, it was all, like I've talked about on this podcast multiple times, his whole career was building up to this. Like, this was now, they had the Pep era, you know, they bridged the gaps, Luis Enrique, stuff like that. But like, this was supposed to usher in the next great era of Barcelona, and it's not. It hasn't come out that way, whether it's his fault. I don't believe that it entirely is. He hasn't done everything perfectly, but he's a brand new manager. Like, you know, so because it was building up to this and it hasn't gone the way we planned, his reputation as a manager has taken a hit. But then you hear Henri talk about, like, his football mind is there with Pep's, and that, and they're in the class of their own for people that he's come across. You know, there's all this talk about what's Klopp going to do next? Will he manage again? Xabi Alonso is the big it manager right now. You do wonder, like Xavi is kind of the black sheep of this moment of managers for big clubs. And you do wonder if, like, someone is going to kind of fall into the next world-class manager that maybe people didn't believe that they were really getting. And this guy is going to have to go somewhere else to prove to everyone that he is that guy.
Where he lands next is, especially with what could be like a kind of summer of flux on the managerial front, what will be a summer of flux in the big jobs in European football, where he ends up is fascinating.
And maybe he'll take a year off. I don't know. But I don't know. I'm very curious because I loved him as a player. Love that he won the league at Barcelona. Feels like there's something cool about that. But a lot of people are down on him. And I'm just curious where this all goes next. Let's see. We'll move on, JJ. Inter Milan, Atletico Madrid. Another kind of rough one. 1-0. Inter Milan, the team leading Serie A right now. I was wondering in watching that game, you know, boy, Inter Milan, they did have chances. Lautaro Martinez, he's an interesting player.
So we've had that... popped right into my head. CBS crew, who I just love their analysis. Well, I love Henri's analysis, and I love Carragher's analysis.
It's a great show. They do. It's a really great show.
Oh my God. The depth they go into is really, really good. I just love how Henri, or I love how Kate preps Henri and Carragher with, like, something that pundits don't do enough of. Tell me about something that's similar from your career that can relate to the game. Uh-huh. That is so interesting. You know, we saw it there with the Xavi and the Henri interview. Like, that stuff's gold, man. It's absolute gold. I love hearing that. But they didn't go in on Lautaro Martinez the same way I have in the past.
All right.
He is just short. And allow me to do some Harry Redknapp stuff of top, top level. Isn't he, though? Let's be honest. Like, whenever you've watched him, he's it's not that he's not good, and I don't want the Serie A
files. He does put up numbers. Like, he's his last few years at Inter, he produces, but you're right, though. I agree with you.
You see him in the big ones. Massive nights in Europe. He's that bit short, isn't he? Come on, you have to join me in this. Because hear, do you hear that noise in the background? That's everyone who watches Serie A more than us filing in to destroy us. I just feel.
Do you
that
think
bitch.
So? Do you think that
maybe?
He,
well, it'd be interesting.
Serie
A
diehards view him in a different way than, like, Champions League viewers do.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, if you look at his output, he does produce. Inter looked like they're on their way to potentially winning the league this year, and he's going to be a big part of that when it's all said and done. But you do, and you've seen it for Argentina as well. You know, chances
just bit short.
He's a weird one. He's just kind of a weird one. I don't know.
And I'm not saying he's not going to finish his career and have, you know, he's kind of like, There's a couple of guys like him in Serie A, and a couple of guys who just to me are like, they've got grit, number like Immobile to me, hard okay. worker, like definitely just that bit short. And whenever he plays for Italy, I have zero faith in him. Belotti, another one of those guys, just no.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
but with anyway. This game, one thing that a player who I thought was on it, Marcus Thuram, looks like a really great player. I mean, I really love his game. And then he had to go off at halftime with an injury, which was a blow to Inter. Marco Arnautovic then comes on, who's another one of these strikers that kind of like, he's pretty Andrew. Good. And a chance falls to him that he's got to score on. He's from just a few yards out, skies it over the bar. But sure enough, then makes up for it later on and gets the winner for them. You felt good after he missed, you saw missing that earlier chance affected him.
I'm just going to read you his career. And this is the career. This is the European journeyman. Like the fact now that he is 34 and he's rocking up to Inter Milan is so curious to me. On loan from Bologna. 20, Inter Milan loan, Werder Bremen, Stoke City, West Ham United, Shanghai Port, Bologna, Inter Milan. I went back and I tried to pick a big game he was involved in at Stoke. So this is from the 5th of December, 2015. Mm-hmm. Stoke City 2, Manchester City 0. Arnautovic with 2 goals. Man of the match, Jerdan Chachiri. Pellegrini, manager of Man City. This was the Stoke formation from that game. 4-5-1. Butland in goal.
Nice.
Johnson.
Oh.
Glenn Johnson. Ryan Shawcross. Walshide and Peters. Remember Peters? He was
Eric? Tough.
Was it Eric Peters was his name? I can't remember. Then Chachir. The midfield was a midfield 5. Of... Jerdan Chachiri, Arnautovic playing in a wide position on the left.
Huh.
And the midfield 3 was Afellay, Stoke City's probably every man, Glenn Whelan. And guess who the other midfielder was?
I don't know.
Jeff Cameron.
In midfield?
In midfield, no less.
He's a Stoke City legend, that guy.
He's what?
He's a Stoke City legend, that guy.
100%. I remember he ended up going to QPR and they played in midfield for a few games. Yeah. And then Bojan up front.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
what an interesting team. Boy, Stoke City had some really interesting seasons. I mean, they were top half of the table for what, like 3 straight years?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Mark Hughes came in and they fell off.
Yeah.
Just kind of that was under Mark Hughes.
Okay. Oh,
have manners, JJ. Have manners. So very very interesting there that the career of Marko Arnautovic. So to see him popping up in the year of our Lord 2024, just scoring winners against Tom Waits' Atletico Madrid is quite something.
I do wonder if you're Atletico Madrid. I guess this applies to a few of these games. Arsenal, this one as well. They lose, but they lose on the road, and now they go home. I wonder if Atletico think, okay, like, yeah, we would have liked
great to result.
Have gotten a draw
take
out of this,
that.
but I think they might feel like, it's okay. Like, we're okay with that.
No, I think they're absolutely fine with that.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest. Well, not fine. Nobody wants to be beaten, but like, they're still in it.
Yeah. Wasn't a great game from Griezmann, who's been so good this season, but I would be surprised if there's not more to be heard from Atletico.
I feel these first legs are all phony wars.
Kind of does feel like that. And let's go to the last one now. PSV and Borussia Dortmund, 1-1. This one maybe with a little bit more life to it, certainly a little bit more controversy. Daniel Malen making his return to his former club. And it is
non-celebration celebration rating?
Yeah,
very good.
It's a 10, right? Like, he didn't celebrate. And
didn't do anything. He did no hand. He did no hands, no Declan Rice hands, like, it's so tough for me, please don't celebrate, don't even celebrate in my vicinity, none of that. He just didn't celebrate.
I can't believe that goal went in, just then, like the way it left his, I mean, look, he smashed it, credit to him, and it was well placed, but when it when it found the back of the net and like it hit off the bar and kind of went across the line, like it took a second to realize that went in. Is that bad goalkeeping? Can a goal not be scored from that angle, or did he hit it just perfectly enough?
Just no, I don't have
it. Also, took a it took a deflection too, which I'm sure didn't help. Well, it helped Malin.
The deflection helped Daniel Malin, and but it carry. Yeah. I feel like, and I'm going to look it up right now just to make sure. But I feel like it carried the ball high, which put it out of the way of the keeper. That's how I felt that goal went in. Let me have a look at it here.
Yeah. I mean, when it left his foot, I thought, okay, he'll get a corner out of it. Oh, wow. It's a goal. It's in, huh?
All right.
He was dangerous throughout. You could tell he was up for this one. Obviously, it's Champions League round 16.
Yeah, let's
16,
have a look. But... See, he takes on two defenders. That's too easy to get past two. Oh, yeah. No, he put his hands out. He did put his hands out. Blessed himself, put his hands to the sky.
That's all right.
And then hugged Sabitzer.
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't as nonchalant as I thought. yeah, it's one of those, like it's deflected around the goalie. Oh, it's gone so high, Andrew. It's gone so high, and it actually gathers pace off the deflection and underside of the crossbar, not blaming the keeper there.
Okay.
Keeper gets a pass there from JJ.
All right. This ended 1-1, of course, because PSV equalized on a penalty. What do you think?
Not a penalty.
Yeah, Mats Hummels was furious. He took to social media afterward. What did he say? Twitter waits for it. Twitter gets it. What a joke of a penalty against us. Again, I cannot believe there can be decisions like today or against Chelsea or PSG with the VAR.
So the VAR basically is not going to overturn a decision like that. That's what Christina Uncle said, the referee's expert. Says it would not be a preferred decision to give a penalty.
But they don't want to re-referee decisions.
They don't want to re-referee, so that's it.
One of those, whatever the call is on the field though, is what stands. Yeah,
Parra made the point, look, when you make a challenge, your foot has to go somewhere after you execute the challenge. But for me, we know those ones. Well, he's got the ball, but he's gone through the guy. We know what those look like. That wasn't it. It's not a penalty. Can't be given penalty. But again, I think it was Mika who got it wrong. Mika was talking about the high bar for, like, the high bar is basically a Premier League diktat. I haven't seen it apply in the Champions League. We've seen some dodgy handballs and dodgy things being given as penalties in European football. High bar is a Premier League thing.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say? Serginho Dest. Had a decent game. I won't say spectacular. It was decent, and then he lined up. I mean, it's probably going to be it. This will be the entire content of the hype video that
he had one for his highlight reel. That was
a nice that rolled the foot over the ball and made the guy tangle his legs up, and then the wrong decision. It could have been America 1-2, beats the guy's total skill. I know there's a defender kind of behind and close to Pepe. Slot it for Pepe. Give it to Pepe. And he shot from that angle and, forced a save. And it's funny because I think Pepe shouted at him. Like there was definite eye contact. I wouldn't call it a glare, but there was definitely
what the F, bro?
What the F, yeah. And then if we're talking about American moments, Malik Tillman.
Frustrating game.
Frustrating game. He's one for me. I'm still not sure. And I don't start giving me Rangers player of the year stats. I don't want to hear about that.
Well, he has been very good for this club.
Right. I think that like the fact that this game was 1-1 is a testament to just the nature of this game on its own, because at periods, the gap between the two clubs seemed massive. Like it did. This is a great result for PSV.
Although I thought PSV are the one who squandered. Like, if a team was more likely to have gone on and won this one, I think you could make the case for PSV. Like, Tillman scuffed the chance. Johan Bakayoko, who I do like, he struggled. He had the volley that he kind of scuffed from point blank range early on. Had a poor first touch later on, which could have been a 1v1 with the keeper. Like, PSV, I thought, did have some chances that they just couldn't take advantage of.
You might be right. Yeah. You might be right. I don't know.
Again, it wasn't a great game. It was another one of these.
No.
I do wonder, JJ, like I've seen a little bit of this. I wonder what you think.
The XG was 1.53 PSV, 0.90 for Dortmund. So,
that's okay. That's probably what I would have expected there. Do you think the away goals rule gone away? Do you think that that's what we're seeing here?
It's killing the big swing.
Like, is that preventing Arsenal in some way from like going for it a little bit more on the road?
No, I Arsenal were just stopped. I don't think Arteta would go out and be, let's be cautious here, keep it tight, you know, Neil Warnock style. I don't think it was that. But I do.
Sure, I mean,
do
look, even Xavi said after they scored, I wanted more. I wanted us to be more aggressive. So
I don't think
it didn't change mentality.
No, I don't. In these round of games, no, but I think generally it will. Like, I missed the big swing, like that goal, and you're like, oh, suddenly everything's changed.
Yeah, but sometimes the big swing kills games prematurely, though.
Oh, I don't
like a game that could still be there. I don't know. The big swing doesn't bother me as much as maybe the way the game is played. If these teams go on the road and aren't looking for much, and it's creating these 1-0s, 1-1s.
I never wanted rid of it, so I guess I'm a traditionalist in that way. But no, but not for these games. Like these were just a poor bunch of games. That's it. There's nothing more to it. I love to remind people on this podcast. You know, for all the blather and nonsense you hear, the beautiful game, oh, you know, isn't it? It's the world sport. This game is often, more regularly, quite dull.
We're all just chasing the next France-Argentina. That's all this is. We're chasing
that's
that.
That's all
next,
this
cause
is.
Because when you get it, there's no, I don't know if another sport can quite produce.
Correct.
But you got to search for it sometimes.
And it's still better than rugby, and it's less stop start than rugby, and it's less stop start than a lot of other sports that we watch, and we love that. But we, like you said, we're chasing Leicester Watford. We're always doing that.
Uh-huh. Because those moments, the way they deliver, I don't know that other sports can compete with that kind of drama.
Nope, nowhere close.
Second leg still to come for these Champions League ties. I guess the good news is most of these are all finely poised, JJ, as we head into those second legs. So maybe there is still drama down the road here. I'm not giving up hope just yet. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break when we come back. A bunch of things still to get to on the other side. A little bit of a quick U.S. men's national team thing. Obviously, some Premier League title race stuff. MLS off and running. We've got Messi. We've got Old Trafford. Lots to do, actually. A big part two coming up. Maybe even bigger than part one, JJ. So don't go anywhere.
Definitely bigger.
More caught offside still to come.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, we'll talk Premier League title race stuff in just a sec. Before we do that, I wanted to mention something and get your thoughts on it. I'm sorry to drop this on you, but I saw a tweet that Greg Berhalter of the U.S. men's national team received nearly $1 million, $900,000 in bonuses for helping the U.S. men's national team qualify for the 2022 World Cup and then guiding them to the round of 16. So his base salary, salary in 2022 was $1.4 million. Right. And with bonuses, his earnings grew to $2.3 million.
So the
Washington Post.
Right. Okay. So the U.S. job is right up there in the top 10 best paid managers jobs, if not top five in world football. International managers, not club, international manager. How do you feel about that?
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I think that, look, it's a big job. We have, you know, even if the U.S. aren't on par with those teams, the expectations are high here. It is, you know, for whatever you want to say about the U.S., it is a strong, its economy is strong. It's one of the financial capitals of the world. Like it is a
technology.
I'm not upset to find out that the manager, this is not a Berhalter thing. This is just like whoever occupies the position. To me, as an American, that's a really prestigious job to hold in sports in this country. If you're the manager of the men's soccer team or the women's soccer team in this country, you should be paid a lot of money to do that job. Sports culture perspective, it's not a Berhalter thing. And look, yeah, if Mourinho has it, he'll get more. But like generally speaking, I'm okay with the person who has that job getting a lot of money.
Right now, the FAI are scrambling around, according to Gavin Cooney of the 42.ie, are scrambling around. They're $200,000 short of getting the guy they want for the Irish international job.
Klinsmann?
Lee Carsley. Chris Coleman was mentioned. He's now out of the running for that job.
$200,000? This is what it's come down to.
They're short.
But I'm saying that's the difference, and they need to make up. Like,
but they're in debt. They were bailed out by the government. You know, the mismanagement, champagne football. Paul Rowan, Mark Tighe, go and read it. Anyone, just go and read it about John Delaney and the FAI and how the association was run for a decade.
If 200 grand. Is going to prevent a managerial appointment for a national team in this day and age where, I mean, money in this sport, it's silly money. And money is thrown around on the most ridiculous of things. If that's going to get in the way, then that's bleak. That's bleak for your national team program right now.
Okay, I agree with you. Now, am I saying, do we know for sure, because we don't know where Carsley is on it, but do we know for sure that that's definitely one of the problems? It appears to be one of the issues. Is it the deciding factor? I don't know.
That would be bad. If he winds up going somewhere else and is a huge success, and we came to, like, this is like, didn't this happen to Tottenham and Jack Grealish, where like Tottenham weren't willing to go like £3 million more or something?
Tottenham capped out at, what was it, 15 million? They said,
something
that's
like
it. Levy said, we're not going any higher than that. He's not, like, not, and he was young, remember? It was when Villa got relegated. And there was some release clause. No, I'm glad for him that he stayed on at Villa to stay up, but it was two solid seasons out of his career at Villa, and Tottenham wouldn't do it, wouldn't go to 20.
I mean, so you know, you make your point, that's fine, but to what end sometimes? Like, you know,
well, considering some of the players
want to achieve, if you believe in a guy and you want to achieve results, sometimes you in sports, sometimes you got to overspend.
I know, so, but you're right about the bleakness.
Yeah, that's rough. By the way,
anyway, I thought I'd give you that update.
Yeah. Speaking of Berhalter, real quick, I saw this tweet that I thought is a really interesting conversation, and it's not today, not for today necessarily, but soon. I just want to put it in your the back of your mind, because this is stuff we're going to have to be getting to soon. At Tactical Manager posted this. Greg Berhalter is going to have a very tough decision next month for the U.S. men's national team striker position. It's a 23-man roster, so he will likely bring two. Balogun is the best center forward we have, but is in awful form. Pepe has been the best performer for the U.S. men's national team out of the three, but barely plays for PSV. Sargent is the worst of the three, but is scoring almost every single weekend. And Greg likes
Sargent. They're not the same kind of player, Tactical Manager.
Well, he's just saying that.
Yeah, the worst. Okay.
Brian Scaretta, who's also a really good follow, he followed up, said, tough decision for Berhalter. If he's only going to take two center forwards for Copa, that means one of Pepe, Balogun, or Sargent is cut. Sargent is playing the best, in my honest opinion. Of course, you wonder if Pepe would accept an Olympic invite. Pepe and Maguire would be two excellent age-eligible forwards on the Olympic team. This is interesting.
This is fascinating.
Because, like, they are
Could he do something clever and consider Sargent's ability to link play and do things like that and put him in as a midfielder?
There's no rules. Like, he can do whatever he wants, but are you jeopardizing another position if you bring
Of course.
So it's just that I don't know. Right now, by the way, the reason I say it's probably not a conversation for today, A, there's a lot of stuff happening right now we want to talk about, but I don't know right now what I would do. And I kind of want to see this play out a little bit more. Because all those points are true. Balogun is not playing well, but he's like the one we hold up as the guy. Pepe has done well for the U.S. in his appearances, and Sargent is on fire right now, but he's been kind of an also-ran in terms of what we think of that position. So I don't know. Here's one thing I will say. tactical manager saying that Sargent's the worst of the three, I don't know if I can say that straight away just yet. Sargent has had injury problems.
Yeah.
He's doing it in the championship, which, so maybe that, you know, lessens what we see of some of his achievements a little.
I think we should get out of that mindset, though. I think the championship is a very good level. I really do. And it's a tough level, and he's shown a lot of fortitude with injuries.
Does playing well in the championship move you ahead of a guy struggling in Ligue 1?
But we've done this before, and
it's tough.
We've done this before about, you know, it's not always an international. You want to get your players playing at the best level possible, but sometimes a guy can slot in an international football and be just fine, and he's not playing, you know.
True.
He's not playing in the very upper echelons of the game. Anyway,
true.
Something for another day.
Yeah, here's what I know about it. Whatever the decision is, it will be used to beat Berhalter with mercilessly after he makes the decision.
So I just saw he's on. We're going to have to tune into Alexi Lalas's State of the Union because he's on State of the Union this week.
There you go.
And first question, if he doesn't do well at the Copa America, what about his job? So straight to it.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Alexi, and... again, I hear a stampede of people saying I should not be giving him any fairness. But in fairness to Alexi, why not open with that question? Because that's what everyone's doing on everyone else is talking about.
Yeah.
Better have a good Copa or this guy's gone.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. I'll check that out. JJ, Premier League, title race, full display, midweek. Manchester City defeating Brentford 1-0. Also, I guess, kind of falls into this midweek malaise a little bit, and also not an incredible game, but important game for Haaland, who was really coming.
Really good goal, too.
Yeah, it was a good goal, and he was coming under some criticism over the weekend after missing some big chances. In fact, I've seen that his missed big chances number is right. It's like right there with Darwin Nunez's.
Massive.
They're kind of the two of them are there together now. Like I always say about Nunez, it is a skill to get into a position to have a lot of good chances, even to miss them.
And can we talk about his finish against Brentford at the weekend? And we might as well. First of all, our dear departed, he's not dead, but our departed Jota, what a header to put in Nunez. Like an unbelievable header. And he's racing through, and I'm like, genuinely, guys, don't know what he's going to do. What I didn't expect him to do was scoop it over the goalkeeper. Like, that's not a chip. That's a scoop with his foot with such perfect dexterity that it goes over the goalkeeper who hasn't gone to ground. The angles of success there are just so small, and it plops right in under the crossbar. A brilliant goal. A brilliant finish. The fact he's trying that. Unreal. Anyway. Continue. And that was obviously against Brentford.
Yeah. Who was also the opponent for Manchester City. A little bit of Norwegian on Norwegian crime with the Haaland goal.
I do think Ayer slips, but like Haaland causes him to slip.
Didn't look good. I mean,
no, it looked awful. It's scrambling. It's one of those, like, it's like the Jerome Boateng versus, or was it Boateng versus Messi? Where he slips and falls over.
I don't know if it was that bad.
And he falls through the hole into another space and time and through, you know, like that. I love that.
I mean, is this meme worthy? I don't know.
Oh,
no.
But, we've been we've had to pay serious attention to Brentford because Liverpool played them at the weekend and now City played them straight after. It's been a dreadful week for Brentford centre-backs versus the league's two best strikers in Salah and Haaland. First, you had Nathan Collins isolated, alone, adrift against Salah for Salah's goal, which is a great finish, but terrible 1v1 defending from Collins, who I actually really like as a player. And now Ayer getting minced, just very bad.
Yeah, another one of these games where, boy, his name doesn't get talked about a ton because he's. Doesn't score a ton of goals. And again, on Manchester City, it's hard sometimes to stand out. There's nothing that can happen, JJ. I'm going to say now, between now and the end of the season, Rodri is on my team of the year. Oh, yeah, you can't have a best 11 in the Premier League at this point, I think, and have him not on it. I think he's reached that level for me now.
He's very good, isn't he? He really is.
He does everything. Like he has added
he
some
scores,
goals, but like and his he's distribution, a very, like yeah. his, some of his like his floated balls to the back post, like he's just got everything in his game now. I think when he arrived at Manchester City, I looked at him more as like, okay, is he the Fernandinho replacement? Like, is he going to just be a shield
he's,
to the
oh,
back?
He's more
he,
than
he's
that.
He's everything. He's everything. And we've seen that happen with midfielders who go there. You know, Gundogan became, I think, a more complete player at Manchester City. And I think Rodri has now, he's done that too. He's everything for them.
Yeah.
I just love watching that guy play. Liverpool, JJ, what a game. Good Lord. And they go down 1-0. And the first half for Liverpool was rough.
So I went into the Munro, by the way, full on a Wednesday.
I mean, we're getting to that point now.
We're
It's a title race and you're leading it. Like we're getting to that point.
You got to book your spots now. You really
especially with City only getting a point over the weekend. Like but it's starting to feel real here.
The silence amongst my brethren in there was interesting because Chidozie Akbene had put them put Luton 1-0 up as I was walking down. And let me just say because of the Liverpool second half, we this might get lost. Akbene gave Gomez just a nightmare game.
First of all, his speed. We all know the speed that Akbene has. He's ridiculous. He's a nice player. I look, I'm not saying that I want Everton to go down, but I will also be sad if Luton go down because I enjoy them.
Yeah, I don't wish to inflict pain on Everton supporters. I'm not really like that. But I am enjoying Luton, everything except their fans. Like I really am. And Akbene, like he's probably going to get snapped up by someone. His career, like arc from Rotherham to Luton to the Premier League, like this has been amazing. Anyway, there was a lot of nervous people.
I was going to ask you at halftime what was going on.
I mean, the general sense was that we will get a goal, but they weren't like Liverpool weren't playing well. And when you see the way you see and hear the way Klopp spoke about the game afterwards, how much he loved in the first half, but that final bit was bad. Jurgen, it was dreadful. The final bit was usually it falling to Elliott or Diaz and then blasting one over from 13 or 14 yards. We couldn't break through. A couple of times Diaz did down that left-hand channel, but it never ended up in like a real great kind of opportunity. Maybe once or twice, but like it wasn't a good first half. The second half, there was this kind of coming together, shooting into the cop, of manager vibes. The manager was berating the stadium. Berating the stadium. Like there's pictures of him getting shouting at annoyed. This was almost like Klopp wanted to create a vibe. And actually, can we listen to the Klopp audio?
Yeah.
He talks about young play. This is a guy who is living out. You know the way they're on the Klopp farewell tour. No, Klopp is in his brain drinking in all these moments and also trying to influence things because he's going away and these are the last times he'll be here ever. He's creating this kind of atmosphere. It's not the media. It's him in this game. Listen to how reflective he is about young players and also about the stadium in this piece here with where he's talking to BT.
Then the kids came on, the kids started, some of them, the others came on and they did an incredible job. So it's cool how a culture educates the next generation, to be honest. And it's like, yes, Curtis is injured in the moment, but I said a few weeks ago, if Curtis Jones can learn defending, everybody can learn defending. And the boys, if you see a Bobby Clark and James McCallum on your guard and Trey sitting outside and you think, oh, maybe you bring him or stuff like this just because the boys are that good. But in general, how the stadium and the team together changed that game was just exceptional.
Like you generally don't hear him say stuff like, it's cool how a culture educates the next generation.
Yeah, this that's is a great almost, line.
Isn't it?
That's a really, that's a pretty profound line.
It is, and he's almost now, he's on the side of a hill looking down on what he's built with a comment like that. You know, he's reflecting, but in the other
well, it's this, sorry to cut you off, but I feel like it's this importance of making sure you've left this thing in better hands than what you received it as.
Oh, is it? Absolutely. But that's the mode he's in now, and it's creating vibes, Andrew.
Yeah.
Like a home game, in the same way he created this togetherness and with a 2-2 draw at home to West Brom, where he made them like cheer the cop, he's doing the same thing now with a squad that's missing probably their best player. Their best player might not play again this season in Diogo Jota. He's creating this atmosphere, this vibe. You know, the same way against Barcelona in the Remontada game. What did he do in that game? Like, they were missing Salah. They were, Andy Robertson went out. Gini Wijnaldum didn't even start the game. Like, Shaqiri started. It wasn't a full Liverpool side. Origi started. And they created a vibe. I don't want to say why not us, because they're Liverpool, but he is creating this, out of his leaving, he's creating this vibe. That's what I'm getting. Then he said, in general, how the stadium and the team changed that game was just exceptional. We all know about European nights at Anfield, big nights at Anfield, and the way things can go. God, we've talked about it ad nauseum. But last night was the manager influencing that, making it happen, like screaming at the cop, like crazy stuff, mad stuff.
I haven't seen that the celebration police had an issue with it.
Four stand celebration.
For a win against Luton, again, that's what it, in a vacuum, it's a win against Luton, but... You know me, I'm anti-celebration police. It was a big win for Liverpool. They're in a title race. They had to come from behind. They're missing key players. Like, it's his last season there. Like, I'm fine. You know, I've got my issues with Klopp. He can celebrate however he wants in a situation like that. I'm okay.
Four-stand celebration.
Yeah, like, I'm fine with it. I got no problem.
It was amazing. But again, he is using the energy that he's feeling, the emotion within him. He's using that and physicalizing it and transferring it to try and, I mean, this sounds like a new age kind of, you know, manifest your dreams. I honestly, I've never seen anything like it last night. It's mad. I don't fully agree with him. The second half was a great performance, you know, but he's talking about the counter press being at a level. Like, did you see Luton? Luton tried to play out in the first half. They couldn't do it. Like, they constantly turn the ball over because they're not a good enough side to do that. But yeah, what Klopp is doing is so interesting. And I'm wondering, Trent, I don't know what the story is with Salah.
He re-aggravated his injury, didn't he?
Right, I presume the hamstring felt tight again. Yeah. Alisson, hamstring again, don't know when he's going to be back. Nunez, not sure what the story is. Jota, probably not going to play again. And Trent, don't know. So, like, in the absence of some of this, like, the guy is creating emotional, like, legitimate emotional football to carry this thing on a wave. That's what I felt last night.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, you look at, you know, a big game, title race is on. Look at some of the guys playing, you know, Jarrell Kwanza, Connor Bradley. They started this game. Bobby Clark, James McConnell, Jadon Dans. These guys came on. Harvey Elliott. You know, Harvey Elliott is one. Like, we've seen this now with Liverpool, and it's what makes this version of Liverpool so great. It's been Connor Bradley. It's been Curtis Jones. Like, different guys in different moments have had to step up for this team, whether it's out of necessity or just because Klopp has put them in the right positions. On this night, it was Harvey Elliott. He became the guy. I know you said he might have struggled in the first half, but Opta Joe posted this, JJ. At age 20, Harvey Elliott tonight was the youngest player on record, so from 2008-09 onward, to score, have five or more shots, create five or more chances, and have 10 or more touches in the opposition's box. He had 17. Created seven chances and also make 25 or more passes ending in the final third in a Premier League game. No, at age 20, he did that. I mean, you talk about a complete game for a player in a moment where they needed it. They're down a goal and, okay, who's going to step up for us? The usual suspects are not out here to do it. So who's it going to be? 20-year-old Harvey Elliott was the one.
Unbelievable. And Van Dijk smashing the header home, then the quick response with the Gakpo goal. Like, that volley, like, McAllister volleys it at him, and he reacts his head really, really quickly, and then they're rolling, man, and they're rolling, and a lot of it is that momentum. Stats guys don't like that word, but it's real, and especially when you got the stadium behind you. Interesting night. I don't know. Can we win a league without Diogo Jota?
Do you have the horses? That's the question. Salah, I mean, you went through them. Salah, Trent, Jota, Alisson, Nunez. We don't know. Some of those guys will be back. Jota, yes, like you said, not sure. But, you know, it's Man City that you're trying to stave off here. And Arsenal, too. But City's the one that you really worry about.
Look.
More than Arsenal, I think.
Look. Like, what a football club. What a football club. After that game midweek, now what's happening? We're off to a League Cup final against Chelsea. And I have no... That game could be really exciting. 10 o'clock on Sunday. That game could be super, super exciting.
Yeah.
Because, like, Chelsea with their little bit of resurgency after a brilliant performance, we should know it at the weekend. Like, one of those where you're like, okay, that felt like something clicked. Like, their defenders, the way they, like, showed up and really were, like, celebrating the art of defending. And then they were so good on the break and probably should have scored more against City. And then you've got Liverpool, who are definitely injured and weakened, but yet riding on the vibes train. Could be a great game.
Yeah. So there you go. Fun stuff. It'll be fun this weekend. JJ, let's go to MLS now. It's off and running. Began last night.
Is MLS back, Andrew?
It is back. MLS is literally back. Inter Miami 2-0 over Real Salt Lake in the season opener. Fun game. Some interesting moments. I mean, we'll talk about a bunch of things, but the goals in particular. The opening goal, I mean, here they are. Busquets to Messi, you know, and then he plays in a well-weighted ball to Robert Taylor, who finishes it off for the first goal of the season. The goalkeeping from Zach McMath on it, like, there's no way around it. Yeah, Messi got an assist. That's cool. Robert Taylor continuing his form from last year. But that can't happen. I don't know what happened to McMath there, if he just misjudged the speed of it. Because
he had a solid start to the game. He'd made one good save already. Tipped one around the post from, who was it? I can't remember. But
From Diego Gomez, yeah.
Gomez it was,
But this one was terrible. I don't know how, not a whole lot of other analysis to provide to it. I mean, yeah, watching the build-up play from Inter Miami was fun. Like, it's going to be like that all season long. Busquets to Messi, and then, you know, who knows what happens from there. It just let him do his thing and improvise. But yeah, the goalkeeping on that one, it's hard to escape the fact that McMath, that was a bad moment. Can't let that happen there. Inter Miami's too good. You can't give them those. And then the second goal, 83rd minute, you know, there's a lot of talk about how are these guys going to hold up physically? What are we going to see? Well, it's the 83rd minute, and Messi, late in this game, he's showing no signs of fatigue. He's charging at Salt Lake's defense. He finds Suarez, one-touch pass to Diego Gomez, who finishes perfectly into the far corner. That seals it. But, you know, they kept coming even after that. Messi, right after in the 85th minute, he launched another attack. Great passing. It all ended at Suarez's feet. And he shot it at McMath, and it was saved. If Suarez taps that back to Messi, it's an easy goal. I mean, they should have scored. Suarez should have laid
super
that back
save
to Messi.
Because it's going, if you see it from behind the goal, it's going in.
Yeah. And then even right after that, Messi, again, creating more danger. Deeks out a couple defenders. It was a beautiful move in the box. He just can't keep – he couldn't quite beat McMath from a tight angle. You know, it's game one, but, like, you know, seeing those guys in the 83rd minute and onward, Suarez and Messi kind of playing the way they were, you thought, okay, well, they still look fresh, which, again, I would hope they would in the first game. But, you know, yeah, so fun game. Even, you know, prior to the goal, you know, on the Messi with the free kick early on in the game, perfectly placed in the top corner. But there's Justin Glad to spoil the fun, headed it off the line. I mean, that's what you have when Messi's taking free kicks, especially from straight on. It's almost a fireable offense to not have somebody back on the line like that.
And
like,
of course, he hits
Justin
the target.
Glad was.
And Glad just heads it over.
Yeah. Now, I will say, Real Salt Lake, they should have tied it in the first half. Sergio Busquets, I don't know what he's doing, but a terrible giveaway in a really dangerous part of the field. And then Andres Gomez takes it, could have laid it off to like two different guys. Instead, he's playing some hero ball there, tries to go it alone and just pushes the shot wide. But either of those passes, they probably score and tie it.
There was two glares I saw in this game. One was Robert Taylor after the first goal. He took a shot from way out on the right hand side and it goes right. And Messi gives him the full glare and the hands out. Like, what are you doing? Keep the ball. Why are you shooting from there?
Is the reverse allowed to happen?
Glare back.
Like, no. If, let's say, Messi takes a shot like that when Taylor thinks he's in position.
No.
Is Taylor allowed to do that?
No, when you play with the alpha,
okay,
and that happens, what you do is you go, oh, and then you clap towards them. You put the thumb up saying, yeah, unlucky.
Yeah.
So okay. We played in school with on our school team with a player who was destined for the League of Ireland. He was just that good. He was top class. Mm. And he went on to have a 22-year career in the League of Ireland.
Whoa.
When he made a chance, when he, when you didn't pass the ball to him when you should have, you got the most unmerciful bollocking in the world, even at like age 14 or 15. I'll never forget it. He screamed at me once. I tried to cross it to him, but I shanked the cross.
Oh, okay.
And he just screams at me afterwards, the ball dribbling in the goalkeeper's hand. He goes, that's your problem, JJ. You get in a good position. You're too selfish. Like screaming at me.
But I tried to pass.
Yeah.
I'm just not, my problem isn't selfishness. It's talent.
Didn't matter. But
I'm
every
not good
time,
enough.
But every time he would take a shot, like there was one where he like blasted one over the bar. It was a decent connection, but still goes over the bar. And the chorus from all of us sycophants on the team was like, everybody almost at once, unlucky, Rafi, unlucky. Just the way it is when you're the alpha.
Yep. And Messi is very much that. Yeah. Not going to see many Robert Taylor. He's got Messi and Suarez next to him. Not going to see many glares from Robert Taylor this season.
No, he's going to be minimal glare.
Some of the other highlights on this one. How about Messi dribbling through four defenders in tight quarters in the box and then still having the vision to chip it back post where Julian Gressel he volleyed just wide. Would have
that
been
was actually
finish, but
such a lovely. Well, he's a quality acquisition for them.
Yeah.
Gressel.
Yeah. And then JJ.
So much of Miami, so much of everything they do is get the ball to Messi, then watch how four or five Real Salt Lake players or defenders feel the absolute need to get close to him and then leave everybody open. And Messi just flicks it outside of the boat and then they're in behind. Yeah. That's the game plan, guys.
Yep. And I will say on Inter Miami's behalf, like one thing that I don't see much of, and I imagine we won't with guys like Suarez and Tata Martino managing them, it's not like there's not much standing around going on. Like when Messi gets the ball, you wonder, are people just going to be in awe and kind of just watching him do his thing? You don't see that. Like Robert Taylor, Diego Gomez, like they are the legs for this team because Messi and Suarez aren't really going to be that. They're making runs. Like they are on the move a lot. There is a lot of motion. It's not just standing around. Let's let Leo do his thing. Like you do see a lot of, there's a lot happening out there. And then, I mean, we can't get out of this without talking about a thing that I don't think I've seen before.
What's that?
And I think if you were a fan at this game, this, like you wanted to see Messi score. That's what your ticket hope. You hope that gets you. But in hindsight, watching Messi with a injured body on the ground, watching Messi almost seek out that body so he could chip over it and then attempt the shot, that might be more unique than actually seeing Messi score. I've never seen him do that. It's unbelievable. Is it disrespect? I don't know what you call it. It's like
Iverson. Where he steps across the body on the ground. Like
Tyronn Lue. Yeah.
It's like, a bit like that, except Iverson's already taken the shot.
I think it was Andrew Brody. It was hard to tell. If it wasn't him, I apologize to him and his family. But for the sake of this conversation, let's say it was. If you're Brody, because I saw this circulating, this question being asked on Twitter last night. Now, for me, the answer is simple. But I'll ask you, if you're Brody, if Messi scores the goal there, the shot got blocked, so we'll never know. But let's say he scores there. Are you quietly happy that now it's one of the Messi forever goals, even though it happened for Inter Miami and MLS, whatever. It's a forever Messi goal because he's never scored one like that, to the best of my knowledge. Are you happy if you're Brody that you're now part of an all-time Messi moment?
No.
I saw people saying that whoever it was, people didn't know in the moment who it was. I'm suggesting it's Brody, but people are like, he should be mad that shot was blocked. You could have been a part of like a Messi magical. No way. If I'm a defender, like what the picture I'll put on my wall is me like tackling Messi or something like that. Not him humiliating me in front of the world.
I worry this conversation is veering into a weird area where we're not considering other MLS players as professionals.
Or even people. They're props.
Right. So, and again, that will be at some point that will be an exhibit in an MLS haters video catalog on X of how this league is not serious. No,
Yeah, I didn't like that. I do you know what I was interested in as well? I did think that as the game wore on, Inter Miami got gassed really, really quickly, and it definitely opened up chances for RSL.
And they're going to need Drake Callender to be good because he's going to see shots, and he was last night. He tipped a header over the bar.
It was straight at him, though, Andrew.
Yeah,
like, he'll make.
But he's a good keeper, though. Like, and we're going to find out because he's going to. You're right. In the second half, from like the 65th to 80th,
thank God,
I feel like teams can get at them if they weather that storm, like we saw last night, and then
with the Messi,
right? Because like Messi doesn't run a ton, so he could still have energy in like the 85th minute. Like it's kind of what you saw basically in last night's game is kind of the formula of what Inter Miami might be this entire season. Score early, try to weather the storm the best they can, seal it late. Like that might be what they are. We'll see.
I think, and we'll see how far that can carry them.
There's
many hurdles to come.
While we're talking about Messi, I got to bring this up. Don Garber, he was on hand, of course. And I saw this tweeted from Alex Silverman of the Sports Business Journal. I guess Don Garber, he had spoken to Don Garber, and Garber made the question came up about how the league is covered in like a post Messi reality. And Garber is suggested that he's not pleased with how the league is currently being covered. And he said this: it's easy and somewhat lazy for reporters to just write about Messi. It's like writing about Taylor Swift. There's so much more here that I think people need to recognize. And remember to stay tuned following the game for our exclusive broadcast partners release of the brand new documentary, Messi's World Cup, The Rise of a Legend. And JJ, if you're looking for more, check out Apple's other Messi docuseries, Messi Meets America. Not enough yet? Go to our official website, MLSsoccer.com, and scroll down a tiny bit until you reach the Lionel Messi section, where we have our official Lionel Messi tracker, and where you can purchase his official Togetherness jersey for a cool $195. Don't want to have to do all of this work yourself? No problem. Sign up for the league's Messi Insider, where all of this content is sent directly to your personal inbox without you having to lift a finger. This is all MLS stuff. Don Garber is the commissioner of MLS, but journalists are lazy. All right, fine. JJ, you ever watch the show I Think You Should Leave? I bet you would like it.
Brilliant show.
Tim Robinson's sketch comedy show on Netflix. It's very funny, easily bingeable. I love it. But he's got this one sketch where a hot dog car careens out of control, smashes through a storefront window, harrowing scene, could have killed a bunch of people inside. And the people in the store are all irate because whoever was driving the hot dog car isn't behind the wheel. He's taken off, or so it seems. Because in the fervor of all this scene, there's a man now in the room wearing a hot dog suit who is suddenly in the store and has this exchange with the other angry customers inside.
Someone drove a hot dog-shaped car through the window.
Driver's gone.
Somebody call the cops. We need to find that driver.
They could have killed someone.
Whose car is this?
Yeah, come on. Whoever did this, just confess. We promise we won't be mad.
What?
Well, close our eyes. Just take your car and get out of here.
Sir, that's clearly your car.
Wrong.
JJ, I need to know if Don Garber was wearing a hot dog suit when he gave this interview. Why, oh, why is Messi being covered so vigorously? Watch our documentary. There are so many great stories in this league. Why just him? Buy the jersey. It's just pure laziness. Sign up for the Messi content delivered directly to your inbox. Who could possibly be responsible for this? I mean, come on, man. Like, if Don Garber, if he wants other stories to be covered and you want to emphasize that, that's fine. By the way, we agree with you. Like, we talked about it with Tom Bogert the other day in the MLS preview. Go listen to it. But when you change the tone of the conversation and start accusing journalists and media of laziness in their coverage, that's when we have to stop and call foul. Because look inward. Like, look at Apple, multiple documentaries about this one guy who hasn't even been here for like 5 months, six, not a year. You know, your own league website. Look at it. Like, if you want other stories covered, fine. Don't say it's laziness. This is what you're pushing to everyone.
Imagine in my single days, you threw a party and I turned up with Scarlett Johansson. And all everybody was asking me, hey, what? How are you and Scarlett Johansson? What's going on here? And I said, guys, come on. I don't want to talk about that. I've got a new job. You see the apartment I moved into?
Come on. I mean, did you see the score, the goal I scored at the weekend? I want to talk about that. We don't have to talk about this.
Yeah.
There's more to me than me dating suddenly from nowhere, Scarlett Johansson. The hell? By the way, there's some sketch comedy shows traditionally are hit and miss. There's some absolute belters.
It's laugh out loud funny.
There's one where the guy is obsessed with like some kind of jazz, and they're doing a mime, you know, they're playing charades or something. I haven't seen it in quite a few years. They're doing charades, and he's doing these obscure jazz characters, and nobody's getting them. Come on, he used to do the Colgate Radio Hour.
And it's really
blank faces. It's very, very good.
It's hilarious.
But you're right. I enjoyed that. That's a good takedown by you there.
Having said that, we'll cover everything, but I'm locked in on Messi. And if journalists want to keep covering him, yeah, there's a point of oversaturation. But for now, the opening game of the season that MLS decided to make their opener and put on like the bright lights for this one, I'm okay. Like, I'm okay with getting a lot of doses of Messi. He's a joy to watch. It's awesome that he's here. But yeah, cover other stuff too. But like, lazy? Come on. Like, that's just not, I don't know. Yeah, the media can be lazy with certain things. This one, that feels a little bit unfair to me.
The way the league
is pushing it.
Garb has been talking about other things. Can I quickly get to the US Open Cup, which is near and dear to many people's hearts?
Okay.
No, I would say to this podcast too. Here's where his comments on the current state of US Open Cup and the involvement of MLS in it. He began his comments with, "We've done an enormous amount in supporting the pyramid. If not, I'm reading from The Athletic. If not for MLS second teams participating in the USL when they relaunched, I'm not sure the USL would be where it is today. And we would have been more than happy to stay in the USL if we were not asked to leave. So I want to put in perspective our commitment to the lower professional levels of soccer in America. Our investment in MLS Next Pro, which is almost unprecedented in professional soccer, that one league could be launching 30 to 35 teams that are developing players that ultimately will be participants in the US national team, help seed our first teams in time. That's an enormous investment in the pyramid. But the question is, does that investment have to be with another league that ultimately we probably don't have the best relationship with? Not by our doing, by the way. So this is like the soccer wars that were rumbling on in the backgrounds of the internet for a while are now bursting forward. And a lot of the things people are saying about MLS wanting to be soccer in America and eviscerating competition and not playing nice with competition appears to be the case. And then he makes a complaint about scheduling. Garber said MLS is committed to participate, and to what level is still to be determined with the US Open Cup. We will continue to do what we can to support the US Open Cup, but we're not going to do it in a way where the entire onus on making that tournament work is on Major League Soccer. Garber said it needs the support from our federation. They've pledged to show more support to that. It needs to make more sense for our players and for our clubs. At this point, we're subsidizing that tournament. Basically, what he's saying here is, why are we paying into a tournament where other leagues are involved in? Why are we doing that? Leagues that are hostile to us, leagues that we're hostile to. We want this. They want the whole focus of soccer in America to be on what they're doing. And by the way, the schedule is cramped because you made up a tournament to bung in the middle of the season.
Again,
oh no,
man in hot dog suit. Yeah. He enters the room.
100%. This is man in hot dog suit level stuff. It's a bad start to the season. For there's so much going on with MLS that you can get excited.
Yeah, not to mention replacement referees, who, by the way, I give them credit. They actually in a tough spot last night. Like, not only are you thrust on the stage of having to do MLS's first game of the season, but it's Messi and Suarez. Like, they did all right, I thought.
Look, Garber says, just to wind this up, Garber says he doesn't know what he Garber is claiming that the professional referees organization and the union were at odds over what was wanted, or that they had agreed to the terms and then the union voted against it.
Yeah.
So Garber says he doesn't even know what they want yet, which means that's more negotiation. That's more meetings. That's more time without top referees in the league.
So much posturing though. It's hard to say. Like,
Who knows? I don't know. Who really knows? Anyway. Yeah.
Let's see. Two final things I want to close out here, JJ. Thomas Tuchel, obviously we have to mention, becoming the latest high-profile manager to announce that he'll be leaving at the end of the season. Whatever happened to just a good old-fashioned resignation? I'm done here. I'm leaving.
Why not just do your job and then at the end, see ya?
Yeah, but now it's all like, I'm leaving in 4 months. Like that's the new in thing. It's very in vogue for managers to announce that they're leaving later.
Oh yeah. Well, it puts the name out there. It starts conversations and it gets people aware that you're out there and you want to be wanted.
I guess it gives them like a few stress-free months where they can maybe rebuild their reputation. And if they don't, they were leaving anyway. So what's the big deal? Like, I don't know. Tuchel's career is so weird. Yeah. He's an elite manager. Like, yeah, he is. He's got a Champions League, but I don't know. He has some weird failings on his resume too. I guess they all do. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of who the other managers are that are like in his tier. Cause he's not in the top. If Pep, Ancelotti, Klopp, like, is that the top tier? Who else am I? I know there are others. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Is Simeone? Is he top tier?
Oh, he's top tier.
I'm just wondering, like, who's in the Tuchel class? I haven't put much thought into it. I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe the animals can weigh in on who they think are like the contemporary, like the other managers in Tuchel's tier, because he's such a weird one.
Would Ange be in Tuchel tier now?
Not yet.
No. Okay. All right. Okay. Jeez, well, I don't know what the tier is.
I don't know. We're sort of finding our
just
way through
below,
here.
Just below the top managers.
Yeah, and so now yet another significant suitor enters the room for Xabi Alonso's services. I mean, Bayern will definitely, I would think he'll be a top target for them. Obviously,
yeah,
Liverpool.
Jan Agafjortoft, our friend, was doing like a power rankings of where he's going to end up, and Liverpool are in third on that, behind Munich and behind Real Madrid.
Real Madrid still? I thought Carlo wasn't leaving. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Well, he signed a new contract, but.
Yeah. And then finally, we mentioned this at the top, JJ. Jim Ratcliffe has been speaking, and he's been speaking about wanting a new stadium for Manchester United, but he doesn't want to just refurbish Old Trafford. He wants a new Old Trafford. He said, what we can see so far is a really good case to refurbish Old Trafford, probably about £1 billion in cost. You finish up with a great stadium. It's probably an 80,000 to 90,000 seater, but it's not perfect because you're modifying a stadium that is slap bang up against a railway line and all that type of stuff. So it's not in an ideal world. Manchester United needs a stadium befitting one of the biggest clubs in the world. At the moment, it's not there. Old Trafford maybe was 20 years ago, but it's certainly not today. And he goes on to say, because there's been reports that they may want to seek state support in terms of funding this. He said the people in the north pay their taxes like the people in the south pay their taxes. But where's the national stadium for football? It's in the south. Where's the national stadium for rugby? It's in the south. Where's the national stadium for tennis? It's in the south. Where's the national concert stadium? It's the O2. It's in the south. Where's the Olympic Village? It's in the south. All this talk about leveling up in the northern powerhouse. Where's the stadium in the north? How many Champions League titles has the Northwest won, and how many Champions League has London won? The answer to that, Northwest has won 10. Liverpool 6 has won more than us, and London, Chelsea has won 2. Where do you have to go if you want to go to the semifinal of the FA Cup and you're a northern club? You have to schlep down to London, don't you? So what happened to HS2, which was going to be a substantial amount of investment in the north? What happened to that? They canceled that, and where are they going to spend that? They're going to spend it on the rail network in London. He wants a new stadium. He basically wants a Wembley of the North, which would also, it would host FA Cups. It would be Manchester United's home ground. It would be where the national team would play in addition.
And he
to
wants
Wembley.
It on the site of current Old Trafford. He wants to level Old Trafford and put this up.
He wants a brand new stadium. I don't know what like, it couldn't be on the exact site.
Moving United from where they are.
Maybe it's across the street. I don't know. Like White Hart Lane, like, you know, it's in, they didn't move neighborhoods. They just literally moved across the street. I don't know. I'm guessing it would be something like that. Cause I think he talks about wanting to sort of refurbish that neighborhood. But
it sounds like he really wants taxpayer money too.
Yes. I don't think there wasn't any sugarcoating that. And he was basically saying they deserve it.
In the tribal world of football, Andrew, I'm sure that's going to go down great. Absolutely.
Let's
great.
All contribute to Manchester United's new gem of a stadium.
Right.
It's not like contributing to Wembley. Again, that's a national team stadium. Now, he's saying he wants this to also be another national team stadium, but that's hiding behind what it really is, a stadium for Manchester United. We'll see. He's ambitious.
American billionaires, mostly, to cream the profits off, and him a billionaire himself. This This is bad. This is bad. Bad idea, Big Sir Jim. Yeah. I would keep your mouth shut on that one.
He's ambitious.
Liverpool had to refurb and refurb. Borussia Dortmund the same. A lot of top clubs are going. Chelsea are going to have to probably refurb within the what they're doing now, and they have refurbed in the past.
Sure,
I don't think.
But who's his audience here? Does he care? Like, is he just trying to right now get on the right side of Manchester United supporters? Because if so, maybe they like to hear this. This man is all in for our club. He wants a better. He wants a better facility. We all know the stadium is not good enough.
I remember Liverpool supporters upset about the idea of moving to Stanley Park, which is literally right beside where the stadium is. So I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. That'll be something to watch because this guy he's out there now. His 25% or whatever, it's been ratified. He's now he's not quiet about some of these big issues of what it's going to take to improve this club and what the state of the club has been up until this point. He's made it. He keeps repeating about how this is the focus is going to get back to football and this
Imagine you're an Everton fan though. All that money pumped into that stadium and the docks. All the hassle, all the potential hassle to come.
Yeah.
And Big Sir Jim is looking for state funding.
Yeah, those same fans can be paying for his new stadium.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're not just paying for our own, we're paying for United's too. Not going to fly, Big Jimmy.
So we'll see. We'll see where this goes. But I just thought some of his comments were interesting. Just Google. He said a lot of stuff. Google it and like go through it because it is worth your time. It's pretty interesting to see, you know, just his views on the club as he enters. JJ, what a show. Holy cow. That was fun. Big weekend to come. Like you said, a trophy will be handed out this weekend. So between Liverpool and Chelsea, that'll be a lot of fun as
well. Hope there's goals in it.
Yeah, I know.
Don't want penalties again. No, thanks.
Yeah. Let's get a nice 3-2, like a dramatic 3-2, like Union Saprissa the other night in the Champions Cup.
After the greatest own goal in the history of own goals.
JJ, this was a lot of fun. Hey, to you I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.